Does this work? I never use a mic. I taught for 41 years, and you could hear me in the back.
Quark.
But I will use it. I'm Sandra from North Carolina and Mill Street. I want to thank Paul for inviting me to read and for you coming to hear me. It's nice to see so many young folk and so many younger folk here. This is the age group I taught. My program is somewhat of a TV scheme, although I've never had a TV. But I'm going to begin this reading with a dedication for my best friend who taught with me for 35 years and is dying of cancer and very close. I wrote this for him, and so this is for him tonight, and I think he will feel the energy in North Carolina. He taught American literature. Do you know American literature? Do you know Emerson, Thoreau, Melville?
Yeah.
Okay, great, because there are a lot of references to those. And now he listens in these days to Mozart and looks at the Hudson River School of Artists as he struggles with advanced cancer. I have a few notes, so if for those who are not real familiar with them. Frederick Church's painting is Heart of the Andes, part of the Hudson School of Paintings. The Oversoul is an essay by Ralph Waldo Emerson. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Call me Michelle. Ishmael, is the first line of Melville's Moby Dick. Call me Ishmael, probably a very famous first line. And the legend of the squaw, Walden, Stone's Walled In Pond, is from Walden by Henry David Thoreau. To a dying friend, for Jeff Jeske. When I watch that flowing river, which our regions I see not, pours for a season and streams into me, I am a surprised spectator of this ethereal water. Ralph Waldo Emerson. The water is not still in Frederick Church's paintings, but full of light falling into a mountain lake without ripples. Two men pray to an old stone cross. Tungahu and Cotopaxi peek into infinity, frame a distant view. Mozart's serenades are evening songs. Violins, violas, cellos fill your sparse space. A little night music for your measured days. Your life, always allegro, a brisk tempo, is now andante. You slow your pace. The Oversoul, not a faculty, but a light that shines through us on everything, on you, dear students. Call me Ishmael, the son of Abraham and Hagar. Call me teacher of waves and wells, the bleak high breakers looming. The hills shake and suddenly sink. The old squaw Walden escapes, but a pond drops deep into the earth. A mirrored surface reflects oak woods. You follow the steep trails to the water's edge. Your canoe floats toward the shore. Keep them in your thoughts. Okay, I'm going to give a commercial, a preview of the next book, and then this book. The commercial is buy books of poetry. Put aside two Guinness a week and buy a book of poetry. Because I don't make the money off poetry, but the presses and these kinds of things need to be supported. And spread poetry. I read poems to the taxi driver, the waiter, the traveler, the B&B owner. Do you want to hear a poem? They have to. Spread your poems, because it is only through the arts that peace will come to the world. You don't have to clap every time. You can just give me a standing ovation. This is a preview. On TV, don't they have previews of next week? I never watch TV.
Yeah, they do.
All right, so this is the preview of where I'm going to go, or trying to go with my poems. I'll read a couple of those. Japanese maple. Dewdrops glint on the leaves like the pearl I found with my tooth after eating the wild oyster. I could barely cradle the pearl, an iridescent irritant, soft, tiny treasure just for me. I palmed it in my hand, let it roll, my seed. Pearls on the maple glisten, pulled onto ferny leaves, hands of frogs with pointed lobes. Moisture falls as the branch breaks the horizon. The Japanese maple shaped like a hemisphere. My hemisphere. I am birthed once again from the wet morning. And that's, things are coming up. Now, this book is about loss, so I hope it's not too serious. I don't think it is. I will tell you about the beginning and the end of the book, but first I think I'm going to read some poems in the book. The first poem comes from a section about family, the loss of family. And the only note is, a living will is a document, you may know, you sign that you do not want to be kept on life support when you die. So this one's titled, A Living Will. I remember whiteness, twice bleached, tubes, long coils of translucent snakes, distorting hips, lips, hissing air to lungs. I remember monitors, dissonant bells, tolling heartbeats, lights, vulgar, brain complexions chalky white. My mother says, how could you want this, letting machines keep him alive? He wanted a living will, got too busy. But the respirator may give him time for his heart to heal, time for him to come back to us. I say to no one. I remember a day in May, my white-haired father found the fawn on the path to the lake. He carried it in his arms back to the house, laid it with whisper on an old blue quilt. He spread the jaw with quiet hands, put human lips to the tiny cavity of pinkness, sighed measured breaths. Aged hands pressed, scarcely a touch, not to crack young ribs. He breathed again and again, the foam already dead. What do you remember, Mother, of what you wanted? Let's see, get what I'm reading. Okay, this next poem was nominated for the Pushcart Prize, and the scene is, I take a young friend to the seashore, and she has just had an infant, so she's breastfeeding, and we're eating crab, so I'm taking out the crab to help her. Saul is the name of the child, and there's some things about crabs here. A sook is a female crab. Zoas are the newborn crabs. And in Japan, there's a current called the Oshawa current. And it translates the parent current. I crack the hard claw, pick the tender pink, place it on your tongue, lush, while you hold your newborn against your peach breast. Saul sucks a soft mouth, pouts petal peak, knows we are in the moon sign. Male crab sees a sook, soft shedding long ribbons of sticky sperm explode. After 1 year, myriads of tiny zoas escape, forage on seaweed, luxuriant, caught in the tangled nets of Oshawa, the parent current. Crack, the crab whispers, as I fish for the flesh. Saul sucks the nipple, your tongue smiles for the pink. Feeding you, feeding him, I find myself caught somewhere between creature and human. Let's see, okay. I'm gonna choose some things that are timely, I hope. In the United States, there is a fad now, well, it's good for you, of eating greens. Kale, especially. Do you drink kale drinks and green drinks over here? No?
No.
No? everyone's drinking. So, no. Good for you, I think. In the South, we have turnip greens, and we eat the turnips, and we eat the greens of the turnips.
Now, turnips is our speed up, right?
Okay. Turnips go back to ancient times when they seasoned juices. And Sappho, there's a little quote from Sappho here that you'll like. The harrow breaks and smooths out the surface. Seeds are sown in sandy soil. Roots reach for the dung. Planted in June, pared away from the sides of drills, stripes of emerald earth sun. In cool water, I wash each tender leaf, remove bits of straw, catch a ladybug as sand sifts to the ivory basin. Ancient turnips season the juice made from carrots and spices. In the 7th century, Sappho whispered to a lover, my little turnip. Now I caress each tiny leaf for the time when you will taste green. That's a love poem for my husband. Okay, we lived in Virginia and on a 100-acre farm. I loved it, the Blue Ridge Mountains, the big old farmhouse, but we decided that we needed to retire, or I retired, my husband will probably never be able to retire, as long as I keep coming to Ireland. But, no, he loves it. He comes also. Let's see, I wrote, to go through the process of grieving when you leave a place, I wrote a poem about every room in the house, the pond, and this helped me with the grieving of leaving it. This particular room is the kitchen. Have any of you been to Giverny outside of Paris, Monet's house? Well, I decided when I renovated my kitchen that I would copy Monet's colors. Cobalt blue and mustard. I'm tearing everything up. I copied the colors in Monet's kitchen. Blue and white floor tiles, ochre painted chairs sit around a long rectangular table. Mustard walls reflect a glow as the sun rises through a row of windows. The kitchen is quiet. At 5, when I come down in high wool socks to throw pine logs into the fire, I hold a hot mug of coffee with mittens, the room cold enough to leave a skim of ice in the sink. Monet's pantry now stands empty, but mine bulges with jars of canned tomatoes, cherries, bottles of dandelion wine. I will make pots of lentil soup, the fragrances of garlic, celery, molasses settle in. Cassatt, Cezanne, Rodin talked long into the night with Monet about the Impressionist, who see light as bathing everything with a thousand vibrant, struggling colors, which at a distance establish life. But the child who joins me by the stove does not speak of paint and changing light. He begs me, "Don't cut my hair, please," as I pick lice attached to the base of each hair shaft, tiny yellow nits. And there are other poems, The Parlor and all of those. The last section of the book is about the loss of self. And I've been working with mental illness for quite some time. And so I'm going to read this poem. I haven't read it before in public, I guess. The suicide rate in Ireland is high, as it is in the United States. And I see that the Irish have begun to work with depression and hopelessness, which is what suicide is, it's hopelessness. So this one's titled Suicide. The incisive possibility hangs in the air while a beetle casts shadows across the linen curtain. We wait for ruby wine in mouth-blown glasses, round and open, warming by the fire. We walk the crush of gray shells beneath the palms of feet and hear the shrieks of seagulls shooting for silver slivers. Sea foam washes over toes, pressing tiny pools in the sand. On the rocky hills above the ocean, a lone goat chooses its way from pale blade to pale blade. The wind pushes the goat back, away from stepping off into the waiting light. What is it like to love the insane? Only you can be well acquainted with the desperate knowing of almost. So, get up and work for mental illness. Not all the poems are that serious. I have a poem here. Did you ever have to read or memorize passages in school?
Yeah.
Stand up and recite them.
Okay.
I did also. And in the third grade, I had to recite The Song of Hiawatha by Longfellow. And Hiawatha, pardon me?
All of it.
No. No, I was in third grade. Some verses. No, third grade. Hiawatha was an American Indian, a personage of miraculous birth, who was sent to clear the forests and the rivers and fishing grounds. Nokomis is Hiawatha's grandmother, but the poem's not about Hiawatha, it's about my red skirt. And it alternates between the poem and the storyline. How I lost my skirt while reciting Hiawatha. By the shores of Gitche Gumee, When I was in third grade reciting Longfellow's poem to my class in a red skirt my mother had made, by the shining big sea water, the tiny snaps she attached to the placket, which is all that held it together, snapped, stood the wigwam of Nokomis. The skirt slid down, revealing my white thin slip, which did little to shield the lines of my underpants. The daughter of the moon, Nokomis. I slipped the skirt back up, held the placket with my right hand, while I continued, there the wrinkled old Nokomis nursed the little Hiawatha, rocked him in his linden cradle, bedded soft in moss and rushes. The skirt, tight in my hand, the class giggled under the sharp eye of Miss Tilly. Stilled his fretful well by saying, hush, the naked bear will hear thee. E-Y-A, my little owlet. And I didn't miss a word. Okay, I'll tell you a little about the book. Patrick, do you want to bring that through? Or
no, I can show it. Okay.
Okay. Are you
disturbing
you? No, you're not bothering me. I was just offering for you to come on. I don't care. I took 41 years. You can't imagine what your kids did. We can imagine. The book is called The Place Where I Left You. It's about loss. And the opening poem, which is the one that won the Gregory O'Donohue contest, is about me sending my son off to college and into the universe. So maybe some of you can identify, you just went off to college and into the universe. In the last poem, I am dead, and I am ashes, and the son has come back to talk to his mother, or mom, in the garden. She is planted under the okra. Do you know the vegetable okra?
No.
Okay. It's not very pretty. It's a pod, ugly, with moist pearls. And I probably am the only person in the world who loves it boiled, because it's very slimy boiled. You don't like it? So the name of the book, it's The Son's Voice, although the book is in the mother's voice. I have come back to the place where I left you, and this is the flower of the okra plant. This is prettier than the vegetable. Talking to okra from the sun's voice. You lived by the book while others rose to the sunrise. You woke to a cup of coffee and the page left off the night before. Going to bed, never alone. You shoved the books to the side like a gratified lover, the dark lines of poets inching off the pages into your dreams. Lacy leaves of a ginkgo tree, I'll remember where I put my keys. Gather up the leaves for tea, you said. You loved language, saved words like gems, razzutazz, berry lime sublime, lucra, bending notes, sliding note into note, you never hesitated. You wrote in your office, overstuffed armchairs like old men with swollen feet, papers tumbling out of antique mahogany chest, a divan covered in a quilt, dark blocks of mothy wool, a vase of wildflowers, dried and dusty. Now this is where the moms come in. Some would say billions, some millions, but you saw only one star. You painted my apartment tomato and tangerine, listening to books, cassette player wires trailing from a ragged blue shirt pocket, covering your heart. For hours you painted long strokes of red and orange for a sun. I have come back to the place where I left you. here in the Kumu dark earth, under the dry stalks, cracked pods sprouting moist pearls. You created the word. Out of you came the tomato and orange walls, the okra, the poem, and me. Paul gave me a little more time, but I know listening to poetry is intense, so if you want to hear another one, and be honest,
yeah,
I
really
want
one.
Yes.
One,
yes.
More.
One more. Is this okay? I feel like an old woman up here with all these young people. Well, I am. Let's see, I think I'll read two more because I don't know which one to read. This is another one about family loss. Pardon me?
Sorry, I read your word.
This is another one about family loss. My brother was killed in an accident when he was 21, and he loved animals, and this I took. He had a deaf dog, and that was my inheritance from him. I took it home. I press my nose into the warm, dark odor of hound. Tears roll off the white, brown, speckled fur, oily as unwashed wool. My throat tightens when dusk and rain blow in. Closing my eyes, I see my brother, slender, blonde boy gone at 21. You saved the death dog from the hunter who wanted to drown him. He was not the first. When you were 9, you fed melons and corn to 2 striped raccoons. In your large teenage hands, baby finches waited for your nudge to fly away. Lost squirrels sucked milk, shiny drops on your fingertips. The dog wakes and stretches beneath my face. I'll read you one more of the room poems, and then you can come read your poems. This poem is called The Parlor, and we had parlors in those old farmhouses. And my husband's mother died one Sunday, and his father, she died of Alzheimer's. He noticed that his father, my husband's an MD, that his father was jaundiced, and his father had not been ill, and so he said, "Dad, I want you to go to the hospital." And immediately we found out he had liver cancer. And his mother died in South Carolina, and we brought his father back to the farmhouse thinking he might live for 6 months or something to be with his son. But unfortunately, he died in a week. And what the poignancy I get in my poems always start with the last line, and I get them from the poignancy. So I thought my husband, an MD, who would have known, is sitting there holding his father's wrist. The parlor. What sound is made when the soul leaves the body? I hear nothing. See only your fingertips firmly on his wrist. The rhythmical throbbing arterial contractions of the heart. The science of death a doctor knows so well. A father brought home to die. He lies on a bed in the old chestnut parlor, his white long-haired cat curled on his stomach. At 84, he is straight, stoic, always a cap to cover his bald head. I sit waiting in a faded chair as you feel your father's final pulse. A soapstone stove warms the room, and in the corner sits the chair and piano, a Quaker hymnal, worship in song, open to blessed quietness.